ました。
Hi, I'm Neil and welcome to the Crosscast. In today's Crosstalk, we are going to review all of the action from the National Champs at Cycle Park in Gravesend, and we're going to talk through all the action from a cracking couple of races over in Pontchâteau in France. Of course, we're going to give you our opinions on Helen Wyman's new role at Experts of Footlogix. And this time we are not actually going to dive into the pits at all. We're going to do one bike cross this time. No pit stops this time, because actually you had a double dose of them last weekend over in Gravesend. In the last run today, we're going to preview the last round of the World Cup, where there is still so much to race for in both the elite men and the elite women's categories. Since last time when we were over in Gravesend, we've all come back down to earth a bit with some grassroots racing, some riding, some commentating. Matt, you were up north of the border again. Did you manage to find any mud?
I did indeed. Virgin Trains didn't love me on the way home from Glasgow, that's for sure. And that was without putting my feet up on the seats. That's probably better than that. I went up, and it's my second year up at the Rookin Glen Cyclocross, which is in a really old geological fault that runs down in a park in Glasgow, and it's an absolutely amazing amphitheatre with some really good woods, really good course, and the guys from Albanac interpret the rules quite broadly, which is really good. So they actually run a 3 metre wide course that has a choice of lines through the wood, rather than being a 3 metre wide motorway that curves and banks through the woods. And it means that there was some really tight racing, which was really good. And Glenn Kinning remarked afterwards, he's the winner in the men's race, just how close it was. And in the women's race, again, Kerry McPhee and Isla Shaw having a real good battle. It was really great to watch. They split the racing in two, slower riders in the B race, faster riders in the A race. Doesn't matter whether you're 16 or 60, slow in one race, fast in the other one. And you know what? It's great fun. It's a great atmosphere. And it was grassroots racing. It was muddy, but not as muddy as I'm told Broxtowe was. I've seen a couple of pictures of my lad Tim going sideways in the air on a couple of sections, but I understand it was a little bit slippy out there. How did you get on, Neil?
It was ace, actually. I felt back to where I'd like to be, you know, so able to control, you know, kind of when you able to think the long game in the race rather than just to feel the pain. It was those conditions that were really fun to ride on, you know, bits where if you can ride it, it makes a huge difference, bits where there's kind of that, it's just as quick to run and ride. Yeah, it was ace, you know, up through the woods. The guys from Beast and CC who promote that race do a great job there every time, and I know they've been working on it for months, cutting new lines, and it was really, really good fun yet again. And, you know, and that's what happens, you know, let's face it, that's what happens all over the country, all over the world. You know, people are out there looking at their venue, taking that odd bit of a, you know, grim wood somewhere and thinking, how can I get some cross riders racing through here? And yeah, it's just great fun. It really is worthwhile. So yeah, I had a really good time, really enjoyed it. But Bruce, I haven't seen you out there on any racing over the past week. Did you actually get out racing, or did you spend your time on the rollers?
No, I was just riding. I just had a weekend off. I needed a weekend of just no stress, no racing, and sort of no work up into that. So I was off, and I just enjoyed getting out on the bike and seeing friends. So it was a good weekend for me. Obviously, though, I was glued to the competition that happened over the weekend, particularly over in France, which proved to be pretty exciting racing. I don't know about you guys, but one of the most exciting races I've watched in a while. But before we get on to discussing that, I think it's the national champs that we've got to get back to. So, Matt, now we're back from the champs, and we've got off our little sofa. What was your best bit?
Sleeping for 3 days straight afterwards, pretty much, because I was absolutely shattered. I don't mind admitting I slept most of Monday. My best bit was the racing across all categories being competitive. And realistically, looking at the talent that's there, the talent that's coming through, and thinking, yeah, we're going to be in good shape if we can keep these guys on board, if we can keep them racing, if we can keep them in cross, we're going to be on. In terms of races, I thought the women's race was absolutely intriguing. I thought that was probably potentially one of the races, but the junior women's race as well was so tight at the front. The men's junior race was carnage, but I wouldn't want to pick one race out. I suppose performance of the weekend has to be the men's race, and just how dominant one rider can be on their day. And I thought that was probably for me the best ride. But I don't know, Neil, your highlights, what was your best bit?
I felt it was kind of a watershed, really. It was a really high quality event, so it felt like we'd gone up another level with the event. I mean, obviously it's a purpose built venue, so they could have been working on that for a very long time. We know they have been, but I think it was that transfer where you're looking at under 23s, even junior riders, and looking at the future. It's a bit of a cliche to look at that next generation, but there are so many there, and you know, we've always been struggling to pick the riders. In fact, afterwards, I actually went back to results from previous years just to see how people have developed as they've come through, and you see riders who were out there racing, you know, and they were midfield riders at under 14, under 16, and then you see them coming good. And I think for riders who are out there as under 14s and under 16s, you know, do it yourself, go back and have a look, see where people were, and you see you're getting that experience, and you know, sometimes it all clicks and comes together, and then you get those riders who this year have a breakout year. And every year we say it, there's been breakout years, and there's been so many of them this time. And if I look at the riders who were there, the racing that was there, the craft, the skill, the power that was all there, and you think, okay, which of these would you select for, I don't know, 2 years time, let's say, World Championships? You think, how would I do that? That's impossible. Yeah. There's dozens of them that it could be. And for me, that was really the most exciting thing. And I'm going to add one little caveat on that. In the context that we've got, you're racing against world current or former world champions across pretty much every category. So the front of all of those races is up with the very best in the world. So if you're a minute behind the best in the world, actually, you benchmark yourself against the Dave AV, you look at those people who are a minute behind that rider there, it shows you the quality of our field.
The best bit, like I would sort of echo you guys, and I'd say the best bit is just where cyclocross in the UK is at, and then what's beautiful is that the future is clearly very bright. And now I feel as though it was, for me, sort of maybe a transition from my generation of riders being the future to the younger people now coming through in the juniors, and even down into the amazing racing that we saw in the under 14s. You know, the categories were so strong across all of them, and you know, people having to apply to race nationals to many extents, I think, oh no, that limits it, but actually that makes it competitive and it brings the sport forward, and that's what we need. And again, little things like having signs to tell your pit crew where to go to the start, where to go as a rider, the stuff that you expect, it's logistical stuff, which to me shows a real change in drift. And I have to say, that has set the bar for where we need things to be for future races, especially at national champs level, but particularly at national trophies.
Yeah, I think you could come back onto the 2 points, the point that Neil made earlier, the amount of time spent to prepare courses at Brozzo and at the national champs, and that logistical stepping up. I think we are in danger. We don't want to go to the point where we only pick purpose-built venues. We only pick venues that are international venues with a view to the future. We need our national championships to also reflect the fact that these courses generally are ridden by a lot of different people over the years, and lots of people involved in putting that on. And you can't just parachute in a team and go, oh, do you know what, we're gonna run a national champs. So I think we need to be fairly reflective on the fact that it was very, very much a mirror of the season. It was fast, it had the occasional slick bits, and it reflected the cross this season pretty much up to date, and it was set on and it was set right. I thought there were a few talking points out there that were controversial. If you think that only 12 men finished on the same lap as winner, 12 including the winner on the same lap, and there were more men pulled in the men's elite race than there were in the under 23 and women's elite women's. There is an argument about should that 80% rule be applied. I'll be pretty firm on that. I think it should. It is a national championships. It's not a participation race. This is to find the best riders in the country. And if that means we have to pull out riders who are in the way, and we saw it with Tom Pidcock being stopped on the corner, on the bank, on the last lap by a lap rider. If you have to pull riders out of the way, then so be it. There's no shame in being taken out of a race at 80%. It's just another way of determining a result. And, you know, it happens to everybody. Even Bruce, it happens to.
Which is obviously a massive kick in the teeth, but you're right. No, you're right, it does. And I think a lot of people went into that feeling like, oh, it's probably likely that I'd get pulled because you've got, like you say, you've got Tom Pidcock, and, you know, as you rightly made out, you know, if you're down by on him by 4 minutes, then you're down by 4 minutes, you know, only a little bit off the back of Van der Poel. And realistically, that's where it is in the world. So it's just that the level's different. I thought what was most telling was that I don't think Fieldy has got any slower this year. In fact, I think he's had a quite a good gear. I just think that there were several people who put minutes into him, and that shows how much better and how the level has increased. And we can talk about how the sport's growing and how this is all changing and all the positive sides of that. But that's where it comes down to it when you get Anna Kay duking it out with Nikki, because I would not have liked to have had to bet on who would have taken that had there not been that chain slip up.
Poor. Don't get me going. I thought that was really telling. And let's face it, in that women's race where we had Helen and Anna and Nikki away, those three riders away, and one of those riders had kept secret where they were heading all the way through those championships. I thought it was very telling on the Monday afterwards when we saw Helen move to Anna's team. And you look at those pictures back with hindsight and you think, well, I wonder what happened there. Because that looked a real fierce battle on the ground. But did Helen need another silver or bronze? Just no. Is it better from a team point of view to have Anna coming through in second place? Probably is. So is Helen being the smart, smart rider that we know she is? Or was it down? Did they fight it out? Could Helen not contain herself?
So conspiracy theorist Matt onto the what's been going on behind the scenes there. I think if you look at all of three on the podium, they all played a blinder, actually, in so many ways. You've got Nikki, she came in, and looking at her form this year, look at her results this year, look at what happened in that race, she's the best female rider in the UK this year. Okay, you could argue about it, but I think it's fairly clear. What a brilliant race from Nikki, and it's been a real peak for her, especially when you look at her, you know, what's, you know, the ups and downs that she's had over the past few seasons with crashes and team changes and so on. I think that's a really, really good result for Nikki. You then have Anna. Look at what's happened to her this season. She's gone from riding from Story Racing as, you know, someone who's in the mix there through to riding, basing herself in the continent, riding for that continental team and coming through, clearly getting stronger and stronger. And then being the first under 23, and then Helen, you know, she came through on that, and she had the Helen 100, which it was almost, it seems to have a lot less publicity actually at the race than I was expecting, to be honest, but in hindsight we can see why. But, you know, she had the Helen 100 coming through, real impact there, getting the podium, and then, you know, working with Anna beforehand, as we discovered afterwards, and, you know, the two of them coming through and racing for the same team afterwards. So I think all three of them, I hope, came away from the national champs absolutely delighted in what they'd achieved over that few days. I don't really know of what happened with Helen and Anna, but there was that one classic photo which actually Helen herself responded to, where there was Anna with a huge grin on her face just as she had overtaken Helen, and people were asking, you know, what's going through your mind there? And actually they responded to it saying, well, actually that's what where Helen said to me the day before, look, if you want to overtake someone just here, take that line over there, and she went and did it to her. At that point, I just thought that really tickled me. I thought that was brilliant.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? It was a great picture for me. It summed up that racing between those two, and I think if that partnership continues to flourish with Helen's influence in the team, I think that is going to be absolutely amazing. I can't see any way that is not going to produce an even better rider out of Anna. And if Helen can continue to bring in riders, we've got hundreds of them. We have. And the Helen 100, I think, has done a fantastic job in getting the riders there.
Yeah, and Helen is, you know, she's got to know so many of those riders through that process, and they've got to know her and realise that she is... she is approachable, and she's really willing to give you tips, and I think that's been she's a real credit to British Cross, has to be said. And I think that the move that she's got now, you can see, okay, this could be the beginning of the next phase of her career. We don't know any details on that, but I think it's, to me, it looks like pretty obvious that there's going to be the next phase of her career coming out, you know, working with teams. But I think if you look at the men's podium, obviously they were all 20-year-olds under 23s, all the same year, same age actually as Dan Tallett in fifth, and you know, you've got Tulett and Pidcock, who are both riding for the same team in TP Racing. You've got Ben Turner and Thomas Main, both riding for Continental with Coronas Circus and Tartaletto Isorex, and then Ian Field in there in fourth. And I was wondering about that top three in particular. You know, what were they really trying to get out of it? Certainly in the interview that you can still hear that we had with Tom Pidcock, I got the impression there that this was a stepping stone for him. He's really got his eyes on a bigger prize in a week and a half's time.
Yeah, definitely. It seemed to be that way. I think as well, we sort of have to give an apology that we didn't tip Thomas Main, because... versus that predictions, we were royally slated by the Northeast. Well, I don't know about you guys,
I think you
but
got
I heckled, had it
didn't you, everywhere.
I did. Yeah, obviously, there's going to be a lot of confidence taken from the guys who took that to the podium, and I think that clearly that confidence that you know you're going to be challenging for the win at the Nationals, to then take that, I'm always battling in the front. And there's that certain thing of, from sort of game theory as well, where winning breeds winning, and leading into that, okay, I take that confidence to the biggest race in the world. And I think obviously that's what they're all taking. But even not to be disappointed for people, you know, for Ben Turner, he'll be taking a massive amount of confidence in how close he was to Pidcock into the world.
He could have had him. You know, that's, you don't know. Would Tom have pulled something extra out? I mean, if Tom and Ben were racing together at the end of that race, would we have seen six riders left in the race, because they would have been battling it out even quicker? Or would they have tangled a little bit and that has slowed the race down? And I mean, that's why we love Cross, isn't it? Because you never ever know what's going to happen. And Ben actually cracking his rim, he didn't roll a tub or anything, he actually broke the rim on the wheel there, you know. He then rode it back round into the pit. He did a good job of getting it back into the pit full stop, never mind anything else. And I think it does show people like me and people like Mason moving up, people like Tulett coming back into form. I think in 10 days' time, when we move into the Worlds, we are going to have one awesome race. And I think probably, I don't want to say this because it will jinx it, but we could have one of our best Worlds ever. And that takes some topping after Beals, let's face it.
That's true, yeah. And if you look at when we had the Pidcock Turner Tulett podium 2 years ago, you know, very memorable for lots of different reasons. And yeah, that could happen again. Yeah, I think they're all coming into great form, and they're all up there, real contenders. And to have that number of riders, British riders, This is really exciting for us. But even further down, you've got people like Cam Mason, and Toby Barnes, who's going to be riding for RST next year, and Isaac Monday. You know, all of them could be racing for much higher ranked teams in the world. George Thompson. You know, we all love George. He's
George
an amazing
is awesome.
Rider, but he's yeah, he's absolutely awesome. And somehow, I think he's going to carry on riding for Sleaford Wheelers. Yeah.
He must have that tattooed in places I don't want to know. He's absolutely brilliant. You know, there's this club rider up there mixing it at the front of the race, and time again. And it's only a couple of seasons ago he had one cross bike and was retiring from races because he couldn't finish the race. And I think he's done an awesome job this season. And we can't, I think, not get to the end of talking about the national champs without talking about Nick Craig and Paul Oldham. Two absolute super vets. They are amazing riders. Paul got better and better as the weekend went on. Nick, I mean, the man's going into the vet 50s next year. You know, virtually his last race as a 49-year-old in cross is the national champs, and he's one of the few riders who were not taken out of contention by Pidcock. You know, he finished on the same lap, and I think those two show that there is a career and there's a long time career available for people who are good enough, and these riders coming through definitely are. We shouldn't go too much further before we mention our little predictions. Not that I'm feeling quite smug about this or confident, because there were one or two howlers in there, but do you have the scores on the doors, Neil? That's the question. Who got what right? Was Bruce the man who knew what we were doing? Are you feeling confident, Bruce?
I honestly, I think it was one of those ones where it could have gone either way, but I know we missed a key. I think I missed a key rider, and I think that was obviously Thomas Mayne. So I think, ironically, that could have been the doing of me.
Yeah, well, I did the worst, I have to say, because I had, well, let's say we all got equal scores. Should we say that? Because we both got the first two, except you got them in the correct order and I didn't.
So, in the junior women?
Okay, so I could take you through what we all predicted. So, Matt, Matt, you had Anna Flynn, Josie Nelson, and then Hattie Harnden. Bruce had Flynn, Harnden, and Hart. I had Nelson, Flynn, and Alderney Baker. There was a moment in the junior women's race. It was about a lap and a half in when Alderney took the front. Sorry, Alderney was in third. Josie Nelson was leading, and Anna Flynn was second in their bunch at the front. And I just said, "Stop it now! Stop now!" That's my prediction. but it then went actually, I think, to what we would have expected. But with Hattie Harnden come through, none of us had her as the winner.
No, I thought she did an amazing race and a very composed ride on the way through. And if you haven't seen the interview with Hattie in a national champs jersey that's up on our Facebook page, make sure you click in. Go watch through the Facebook Live from the champs, because it was a wonderful interview. And Hattie is maturing into one very fast rider, but also a very composed rider as well.
Absolutely, that's right. Then in the junior men, we all agreed on the winner of that race, Lewis Askey.
And of course, we knew that went right.
Yeah, that did go horribly wrong. And for those people who have only seen the racing on TV, one of the points that wasn't made on the coverage was that Lewis Askey had been hit by a car, knocked off, the bike written off, and he was in hospital midweek prior to the Nationals. So he put in a second place ride after being run over by a car 3 days before, 4 days before. Whether he should have been riding or not, I don't know, but the man has serious grintus, that kid. He is absolutely showed he's got class, because to take second and only be beaten by the world champ, I thought was a great ride. But Ben, oh, skill on a bike. He looked so good, didn't he?
Ben Tulip.
Yeah, I mean, he just looked so classy, didn't he? And I think he even smiled at me and gave me a nod midway round, like in the middle of nowhere on the course. You know, it's just next level.
He was riding so well, and I was in the pits for that race, and you could just see the communication that he's got with his pit crew. Everything was calm, under control. It was brilliant. I was so impressed with him. Yeah, it's not that it's any surprise, but he just was riding so well. You know, Ben Tulip there, and then Jensen Young was in third. We all had picked Jensen to be in our top three, but you two got him in the right place, so I didn't.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting closer. Getting closer. So on to the elite races with the under-23s.
Yeah, so under-23, well, what should we do to start with? Under-23 women. This is an interesting one because, yeah, I do wonder if we'd had a full complement of under-23 riders there, whether there would have been a different result here. But ultimately, of course, we had Anna Kay winning, which we all were correct with. That was fairly... I think there was no question that about that. In second place, there was Fionn. And so, yeah, Fionn James was... Yeah, she was fifth over the line, that's right. Yeah, and so she was in second. And again, I think we all had her in that position. And then we had a slight difference with Matt saying it was going to be Sophie Thackeray in third, and the both the other of us saying it was Wadsworth, who actually didn't take to the start. So we were never going to win that.
No, and I had nothing to do with Emily not taking to the start, just to make sure I actually got 3 out of 3 on that. I'll assure you that now.
I think no surprises, actually, to be honest. So they've all been up there all season. Good to see Sophie Thackeray coming through. Looks like she's getting stronger and stronger. I think she could be fighting for higher positions next year.
Yeah, I think she's one of these riders we were talking earlier. Don't focus. If you're not there, if you're not winning at 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and Sophie's done a fair share of that locally, but nationally she's found that harder. But I think come her mid-20s, you could see Sophie actually becoming one of these riders that we see racing regularly at the top of the sport, because I think she's got that progression in there and she's steadily making her way up, she's steadily improving, and I think that's one of those riders we're going to see in, again, yeah, a medalist. And you know, she's been a medalist before, so
and I think next year Fionn moves out of under 23s, I think next year, and but then you've got all those riders coming in from that juniors. Who knows what's going to happen next year? That's going to be great, getting those head-to-heads between Harnden and Kay, for example. That's going to be ace.
It is, but you've still got Anna Flynn. I think you're still going to be down in juniors. She was a first-year junior.
That's right.
So I think both those races are going to be amazing next year in both those categories. The under-23 men and the senior men, well, let's leave that for the moment. Let's do the women first. So the elite women's race, what order did you say, Bruce, can you remember?
I think that I might well have not gone as well as I'd hoped there.
No, I've got them written down here, Bruce. Don't write yourself off. You're not getting 80%ed on this one. You had Bramier, Kay and Wyman for your top three.
Well, so maybe it's just the order was wrong.
No, you were there. Was
that the right way around?
Yeah.
Should just be more confident with my predictions. I've got post traumatic stress from last year's to basically take what would have been quite sensible predictions and just throw them out the window.
What was I?
I think you had Bramier, Kay and Wyman as well.
Yeah, Neil. So yep. How did you get on?
I had Bramier and Kay as well. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah, and we all did well. Third place was going to be who?
Fionn James.
Say that again. Sorry, yeah. I didn't hear you, Neil. What was that?
Yeah, I predicted James and Fionn. I still had faith in you.
I know.
Right up until that last lap.
She's the best educated on the podium.
Yes.
Well, maybe, but it was great. We haven't mentioned Beth Crumpton, who actually finished ahead of Fionn. Beth Crumpton finished fourth over the line. I think she could have. She was only a few seconds really behind Helen Wyman there. Yeah, it really could have gone anyway. I think the best three riders were first three over the line. But if you look down that top 10, cracking set of results really. Yeah, really. Next year could be any of them.
Okay, yeah. Men time, and let's have a think. Bruce, how are you feeling on this one? Have you got some confidence back?
I think my confidence is slightly higher. I think I had... Did I have a fully accurate prediction?
Not on this one, because you didn't predict Thomas Main.
Oh, no, you're right, I didn't.
We all had Fieldy in third, which none of us were correct on that. He was finished in fourth. You both had Pidcock and Turner. I had Turner, Pidcock. So, yeah,
so basically, you totally hashed it up again on that one, Neil, didn't you?
Well, I wouldn't say I totally hashed it up. I had two out of the top three. As did
not
you.
In the right order.
Yeah, that's true.
And I must admit, I paid my penance today. I was on the turbo watching some of the coverage in my Tartletto Isorex socks today, just because we were coming on the crosscast and I felt I needed some penance. Although they're actually quite nice socks.
They are, yeah. I put on, I think I put on Facebook this over the weekend, that I wore mine. I wore some of those as well when I was racing, trying to channel Thomas Main while I was racing last weekend. I'm not sure it worked, but...
Did you manage to stay rubber side down in the race?
I did, actually, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. apart from when I had a Matthew van der Poel moment and a Marshall... Well, there's no criticism of the marshal here. Just Marshall jumped in to help someone who had crashed and looked like they were a bit hurt, actually. So yeah, the marshal was doing the right thing, trying to jump in. I took evasive action to try to avoid the person on the floor, and actually we collided with the marshal and then landed on the person on the floor. So it was just one of those turns of events that. Racing incident, and we're all there trying to do the right thing to be
maybe
in the
wear
right
the woolly hat
right
next time for extra cushioning on your head or something rather than the socks might be worth a go.
Absolutely, yeah, something like that. But anyway, I quickly got out of there before they took my number down and was out of sight. In the under 23s, Tulip was picked by Matt to be in third, and myself and Bruce picked Cameron Mason.
I know. Just too
sorry, Tom. Well, do you know what? I think it's quite good that we actually all got it wrong, because do you know what? It just shows you just how many people there are in contention. Because you've got Cam Mason, you've got Tom Amin, you've got Tulip, you've got Turner, you've got Pidcock. That's five just off the top. And that's before you start running into the other guys who have been up there fighting, people like Matt Taylor, who was up there in the back, and he's had a great series. People like McLeod, who wrote the National Trophy Series and took it just at the end. And Mr. Barnes, of course. So, you know, that's about eight, if not nine riders, just off the top of my head. I think we are looking really, really good. And I think none of those should be worried about their result at the National. I think they've all had a great season. I'm looking forward to seeing them racing what's left of this season and into next year.
Yep. I mean, speaking of this season, last weekend there was the World Cup at Pontchâteau. Last week's show, I gave a very, very brief preview of that, and that was the race where, well, it was the European Championships, where Helen Wyman and Nikki Bramier had a coming, well, they were involved in a crash on the start, and both of them were hurt pretty badly on that. So thankfully, well, first of all, Helen wasn't there, and Nikki managed it to the finish this time, even though she didn't have her greatest day, because the race was just so fast. It was really difficult. If you had anything go wrong, if you punctured, then it was very, very difficult to make your way forward. I was actually in touch with Goose van der Meer, who was on the show a couple of episodes ago, and he punctured twice, and he really struggled to chase back through. Yeah, it was because it was so fast, but there was still that controversy there. There was the issue of so many of the female riders hitting the posts on one of those very fast corners. I didn't see it happen in the men's race, so I don't know whether the course had been changed there, but when it happened the first time and then the second time and then when it happened the third time, you think there must be something wrong with it there. All that I could see was that there was that posts and nettings discussion of if you've got catch netting, which side of the post should it be, and it was the fact that the posts were on the inside of the netting at that point. But I don't know if that's what was causing the crashes. Do either of you know?
Well, that doesn't cause the crash.
I was going to say
it's not likely to cause crash, because if you hit the netting hard enough, you'll push the netting round the back of the post anyway. It doesn't help. It definitely is wrong. It should be the other way around, because it does give more strength to the netting. If the netting is pushing against it, you're not relying on zip ties, it's less likely to tear. However, the crashes weren't caused by that. It was a very, very fast section of course. If you watch the run into that corner, it's quick. And then the riders are coming through and they're flicking across onto the left-hand side. It drops away to the right. And I think what we're just finding is that people were just hitting it too fast, too quick.
and the pressure was on. It was very close racing when they went down. And sometimes it was about sliding out and then hitting the posts. Sometimes it was about following the wrong line, clipping it with your bars. But three riders down, you have to look at that, because one of those went off in a neck brace on a stretcher, and that's not good to see in any race. And when you have three riders down, it's bad news. In the men's race, couldn't see that section. The crowds were so big on that section, you couldn't actually see whether they'd moved the posts out or not to widen that corner out. But it could be argued, at that speed, you want to have a little bit more room to slide out and down and then pick its way back up the corner to come back up the camber, so that if you drop down, it's a slower line and the riders are encouraged to just stay high, and it rewards those that stay high. But I'm not sure. Bruce, do you see anything that you would change?
There's an interesting point there, isn't there, which is like, is a course wrong, or are the riders going too fast? And, you know, do you hit a corner at full speed with the consequence? Because you could argue that you hit a corner at, you know, something, you know, Hoogerheide, which we're going to come and talk about. There's a tight corner where you ride really close to the outside line, and there's big stakes. In fact, there's a lot of really big stakes. They're called trees, and people tend to avoid them as well. You're right, though. It's never good to see riders going off with a neck brace on. But what I thought I took away from the racing was sort of twofold. One was, did you see the average speed that they were riding on that lap midway through the races, both in the men's and the women's race?
Yeah,
unbelievable. Like, it was.
What was it, Bruce?
It was 28.6 kilometers an hour on the seventh lap of the men's race, 28.6. So that's like a pretty brisk roadie riding speed. That doesn't include dismounts, etc., etc. That is average though. That is rapid. And the other thing I thought was really interesting was that we saw great results in both races from a point of view of intrigue, quite interesting tactics. How often is it that we see pelotons of cyclocross riders in bunches in January? It's so rare to see, you know, a bunch of 10 riders riding as a pack and then slowing down and then the group coming back together and then someone firing off the front. And we saw that in both races, and it was really interesting to see.
Well, I thought in the women's race, you had this... it was just really odd, again, because it's January. Santa Camp wasn't there, and you have this amazing start from Marianne Vos, and then there's dust being thrown up in January in some parts of the course. And then when they came back round after that first lap, there were so many in that bunch, it almost looked like they regridded it, because they were all the way across the course, and it was like, let's go again, let's start again. It was like a warm-up lap. It was really strange, but it meant whenever anyone went off the front, it was very, very difficult to make it stick. And it was almost people dropping off the back rather than going off the front.
Yeah, I think it was a race which was determined by two, maybe three key things. One, it was a course that Sanna avoided. So we had no Sanna, and I think that would have changed the dynamic there. I think it was a race that mistakes cost you a lot of time. Because it was so quick, people are going a lot of distance once you're down on the floor, and the crashes in the women's race happened in those leading groups, and they put splits in and people had to put efforts in. But the course was very fast, and for me the key area was actually in the climb to the hurdles and the slight climb afterwards, because you saw time and time again riders attacking into the bank just before the hurdles and putting people on the back foot and then coming out of the hurdles. We saw it all the way through the race, all the way through to when Vos went away at the end. That was where they could go. And there were some very tired legs going into the hurdles, and that's where there were mistakes being made. And I think for me, I loved the racing and I hated the course. I thought the course was... I could go ride around Windsor Royal Park and find something more interesting, and that's pretty flat. You know, it's not a course that is inspiring, but it's that balance. It's a fast, exciting race because there's not enough to break it up, and it takes all race to wear people down. And I think we have to be careful that we don't turn cross into grass crits. We've had a season full of them, and for me that was a very grass crit type race. There was a lot less actually having skills, and I think that's possibly why we had so many accidents on that really technical part, because that was one of the few times you actually did have to think about leaning the bike over off camber and about the amount of grip, and were riders sacrificing the grip there for the speed everywhere else around that course, which was so high. And those riders who pumped the tyres up a little bit too hard, cut a little bit too much pressure, they'd have been the riders who go down quicker on that one technical point. So maybe that's where it was. What did you think, Bruce? You watched it like me and absorbed by it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was most captivating weekend of cyclocross racing, both in both elite men's and women's, I would say, of the season at the World Cup level, certainly. What did I think? Again, that speed was something that has become a factor in many of the races this season, and I do think had we seen Van der Poel there, we'd have seen pretty much the same result with regards to you know, the pecking order. But I think he'd have been in front of them. You know, I think that the speed that people were coming into sections mean that we saw the inevitable Lars van der Haar mistake. He always does it. He, you know, like, poor bloke, he's great at riding into things at high speed, and, you know, I'm pretty accomplished at that, so I can only say I know what you feel like. But really, in terms of the level and where the top 10 of both the races were, it was always the same characters fighting in and out. But it was really interesting to see that bunching up effect happen to both events and see how riders are playing it. Michael van Tornout giving a really big push off.
Yeah.
And then you see the experience of someone like Voss eventually taking that all the way to the line. And it shows that when it comes to a tactical race, going early is not always the best thing to do.
No, definitely agree with you there. I thought immense racing. The men's race was characterised by that breaking apart, coming back together. That mistake by van der Haar allowed those four riders to go clear. And you thought, that's it, game over. But then they start coming back. Lawrence Speak had a great race, and then he messed it up. He went for a real flyer on those hurdles. He landed the second hurdle wrong, went over the bars. So that was his chase done. But you think that's it, it's over? He comes up to the leaders and puts in a dig and goes up on the front again. He then blew spectacularly. I think he'd put that dig in knowing that he wasn't going to last. But I thought it was really, really exciting. And again, another race characterised by a loss of a rider, by not having Van der Poel there. If Van der Poel had been there, I'd have put a lot of money on him taking that, because it was so, so quick. And I think he's got that pace. And we're just going to have to see how that carries on. But definitely the best men's race of the year. Good to see Wout van Aert on his way back, clearly on form, and taking the lead in the World Cup as well, which is something that perhaps we wouldn't have predicted. I don't even know if Neil predicted the fact that we could see Wout van Aert up at the top of the standings.
No, I did. Yeah. No, it was the fact that Matthew couldn't take it because he chose not to race those first two rounds. And I think the point before was that's Wout van Aert's first win of a World Cup this year, unlike two nets. And that was those riders who are fighting at the front are the ones that went to the US to race those first few races. So they did look at the long game on that. My rider of the day has to be Jens Adams, though. Yeah, he found himself. Yeah, he's a good rider, but he found himself on the right side of the split, and I was almost waiting for him to pop, and he never did. Yeah, you saw he went so deep to try to get back on in that group of four that were off the front, and I loved seeing that. It was that rider in the place where they've been desperately trying to get for so many years, and they managed to deliver. I was hoping that he'd come out with the podium, I must admit, but you know, it didn't work out that way. But that fifth place, what a really, really good ride from Jens.
And I thought, looking slightly further out than we saw on the TV coverage, some real interesting moments in the other races. Thibaut Nys takes a win in the juniors on the run-up to the Worlds. That is going to be telling as we move into the next two races, because remember, we're going over to Hoogeheide and then to the Worlds. And in the under-23s, well, who's the rider on form at the moment? Who's the rider who seems to be heading towards unbeatable? It's Tom Pidcock. And he's going to be going in as hot favourite, like he has done previously, into the champs. Can he keep his head together for these next two races? And he's currently leading the under-23 series. So I think he's pretty much going to be untouchable. It is a bit... he's a great guy, but I don't think he's going to touch.
I think
Pidcock.
He's won the under-23s championships because they dropped the lowest one or two rounds. Come up if it's one or two. Yeah. But if you look at that under-23s results, just look through the nations there. I think this is quite interesting. You've got Great Britain, France, Italy, Czech Republic, then the first Belgium with Eli Isabeat. You know, great rider, of course, but only in fifth. Then three French riders. Then the second Belgian rider. Then Dutch. It's a really international We're used to seeing that in the women's fields, but not in a men's under 23 field. So I think we could be seeing a real change and much more of an international move as they move up into the elites as they go forwards. And going forwards, I think it's time for us to enter the last ronde. So in the last ronde, this is where we always look forwards, and actually we're only going to cover the finale of the World Cup this year, which is at Hoogeheide. The winner of the women's category is already sealed with Marianne Vos, but the rest of the podium, if you look at it mathematically, there's loads that could be on there. You're probably the first ones that are likely to be second or third, but you've got Verst, Kant, Katie Keogh, Betsema, Alvarado, even Van Looy. They're all up there capable of getting a podium. And in the men, that's wide open. Van Aert and Aerts, it's basically a head-to-head between them. Unless they're some way down the field, whoever comes over the line first wins the World Cup. There's only 3 points between them, and you know, you get a lot of points if you're up there in the top 10. Matthew van der Poel, well, he's currently third, but there's no way he'll keep that unless he decides to come back, which he's not expecting to, because you've got four riders who are within 13 points of him. So Van Turnhout, Lars van der Haar and Quinten Hermans are all in the 390s, and just outside the 390s is Sveik. So look at where we project forwards. We've got the World Championships coming up. If these riders, or particularly the majority of these, think, well, I'm not going to get the World Championships, maybe they'll be looking for a podium in the World Cup, and there's so many of them there with something to prove. So I think the race at Hoogeheide could be an absolute cracker, both in the men's and the women's. Matt, you were there last year. Anything you think we should be looking out for?
Well, it's a really quick course. It's 3K long, and out of that 3K, 70% of it's grass, and the grassland is just quick. Last year it was relatively dry. It's even drier now from what we're hearing. It's going to be really, really fast. The interesting bits, actually, once you go into the woods, and those woods you come round, you go dropping down at some real high speed around a right-hand turn, and that berms up. It's really loamy, so you find it berms, and the riders who can ride the berm carry the speed through. But of course, it's got that fantastic corner where you come out, you're on your run towards the start finish, that long straight that goes uphill. But in the running to it, you drop down off on an off cambered right hand bend that drops down to the tarmac. You then come round on the tiniest Scotty's bit tarmac up some massive steps, and then you've got another descent off camber, which is even harder, before doing your left turn to the start. That was critical last year in every single race, and it was the place to watch because moves were made there. And of course, that's where we saw that infamous crash between Pauline Ferrand-Prevot and Yolanda Neff there.
Yeah.
And that Evie was Richards a real game changer. And
Evie Richards, well, she wasn't involved in the actual collision there, but she was a part of the three who were racing each other at that point. It was so disappointing that that took both of those out for the world champs last year. But that's one of those areas on the course where if you slide out on it, you're down big time. You know, you've got all the gravity there, you're going to slide out, and if someone's next to you, you're going to take them out as well. So the course itself, in some ways it's just a classic cross course, but everything's big at it. You've got that ramp, that ride up ramp, which just seems to be bigger and steeper than most ramps. You've got that set of steps. I should have
stairway
counted
to
them
heaven.
Actually it's stairway to heaven. You should count those steps, work out how many times it is going up your flights of stairs at home, and then try running up and down that, you know, the five times it will take with your bike on your shoulder. And you just see they're kind of going up there, it's like metronomic going up there, ding, 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 all the way up the steps. It's a cracking course, actually. Always gives us some good racing, particularly when it's tacky and a bit muddy. I don't know what the weather's going to be like there at the moment. I'm hoping it's going to have a little bit of interest and a little bit slippery in places.
But in many ways, I wonder whether it will be good to see that, or whether we would want to see it tacky, primarily because it predicts, it's a really clear predictor of what we might see in Denmark. I don't know, Matt, obviously you've been there, and I think maybe that might play into what we'll see in Denmark.
I think so, because that steep bank that you see in Denmark at the World Champs that's used repeatedly is really, really steep. You hit it from the flat, you hit it sometimes with speed. Now, that is going to change a little bit on the course, and we're still waiting for an update from Denmark on what that course is quite going to be. But I think we are going to see a clear indication if everybody rides. And I think people are being much more tactical this time around about where they're going to be, who they're going to be racing against.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's going to be one of those ones. We know Van der Poel's not going to be able to win the series. Women's is all to play for. It's just going to be an absolute belter of a finale.
Yeah, I think so. We've got so much to look forward to with this World Cup race. Do make sure that you make every effort to be able to watch it. And then after that, we're into the finale of the season in terms of the World Champs. So what we're going to do is to give you a little bit of a preview now as to what we're going to be doing, if that makes some sense. So next week we'll be back to give a review of Hoogeheide, to give a review of the World Cup and a roundup of all the placings on there and how that's gone over the year. I think it's been a really interesting year, but we'll talk about that next time. And then we're going to do the most important thing. Not only is it so important who wins those, but it's important who's best at predicting who's going to win the World Champs. We've seen some changes over at the World Champs course. I saw coming in on a lorry some pictures of one of the a set of steps, I think it was, coming in. And you know, go back and listen to Tom Pidcock, where he was giving his advice to Hattie Harnden on what to do at the World Champs. And he was saying, he said two things. One of them was basically you ride around on the flat and then you run up a steep bank, and then you ride around on the flat and then you run down a steep bank. And that was the description of it from last time. But what he said to Hattie, you can listen to this back on the last show, was just ride fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Tom's tip. Just ride fast. Tom, think, yeah.
Yeah. It's insightful from Tom there, isn't it? It's always good quality. Yeah, just ride fast, you'll be fine. It is quick. It's blisteringly quick. And I think it's going to be really hard to predict who's going to take the win. I think time for everybody at home to start looking at the results. Watch Hoogeheide. The coverage is on the Eurosport Player and on Eurosport. And then get ready to put your predictions in for the World Champs. We're going to be doing the same. Bruce is going to be spending his time making sure he's got it all dialed in and ready to go. Ready to go, aren't you, Bruce? You're ready. You don't want to be doing any embarrassing runs in flippers or anything, do you?
No, I know. I just don't want to embarrass my my reasonable record now. I'm able to maintain something. I want to keep it.
Well, we're going to see if you can keep that up. I'm going to be checking it out, and I'm looking forward to watching all the racing. I don't think there's a single race there I'm not looking forward to, and I think they're going to be wide open, and I'm going to start now writing down my predictions, which might well change, but I'm going to make an early start on my homework, I think. What about you, Neil?
Well, the end of my season comes this Saturday with my last race in the Notts and Derby League over at Chilwell. It's on a military base, so it's always good racing there. They've got a sand pit that they put in a few years ago, and depending on just how dry that sand is, it can be either not a lot or it can be really quite a tricky bit to ride. I really enjoy it. I like riding through sand.
Are you going to be there,
good
Bruce?
Place for photos.
I am. It's my last race of the season.
Your last race. So hang on. We're all going to be together because Neil's racing, Bruce is racing, and I'm on the mic with the tunes at Chilwell for the last one for the Fossa round. So it looks like we're all going to be together, which means I can be really critical of both of you next show. Well done, guys.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to the truck. I've got to say, it's going to be my highlight of the season, that one is. It's always a good race, last one of the season. And fingers crossed. Legs up, ready. Done another training session, panicking before the... Clearly, I'll peak at the end of the season, as always happens. So, yeah, it'd be great. Look forward to my my glorious start to the road season.
Well, we know loads of the NDCXL riders listen to the show. Have a good race at Chilwell. And for the rest of you, really hope you enjoyed it. I know some of you are still racing, but a lot of the leagues have now finished. We get great feedback from you. Please do share, retweet, tell your friends, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you are at Chillwell, because I think that's the last outing that we've got on the Crossbikes this year, do come and say hello. We'll be back next week with the World Championships preview and telling you what we think is going to happen and what we're going to be doing over the weekend. In the meantime, you can find us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast Neil. Bruce, where can we find you?
You can find me at Bruce Dalton's CX. Don't forget, Cross isn't over yet. And Matt, where can we find you?
You're going to find me, as well as being on the mic at Chillwell, you can get me on the internet at Matt Fixer Pain.
Great to talk as always. We'll see you all on the other side of the tape. Bye.